This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? How y'all doing today? I hope you're having a most excellent Thursday. I know I'm enjoying these near summer-like temperatures. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Thursday at the top of the hour, and so I'm always excited to be joined by a very special guest host, one of the most reasonable men ever to run for elected office. His name's Tom Paulswitz. He's a Navy veteran, a small business owner, and a two-time congressional candidate in Wisconsin's 5th congressional district. So we're very excited and happy to happily welcome Tom back to guest host. Today, we also have a couple of additional guests. Joe Fox from Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin is going to join Tom and I at 2:30. We're going to talk about turning out the youth vote. And of course, we've got Maggie and the Millionaires talking money at the 3 o'clock hour. Today, we're going to be joined by Peter Goodman. He is the New York Times global economics correspondent. And he wrote a book, a couple of them. First book is called The Davos Man, How the Billionaires Devoured the World. And his newest book, How the World Ran Out of Everything Inside the Global Supply Chain. We're going to talk about the global supply chain, what it means for wages, what it means for our economic well-being. Are we still susceptible to supply chain disruptions? We'll talk about that with New York Times global economics correspondent Peter Goodman at 3:30. I'm really happy that she can still make it on the show today. We're going to be joined by the candidate for the 8th Congressional District, Dr. Kristen Lierley, just hours before she's going to get on the stage with Vice President Harris in Green Bay. Dr. Lierley is going to be giving comments with the Vice President today at that rally. So excited to talk to her. And last but certainly not least, I'm going to be joined by White House spokesperson Frederica Applewhite at 3:50 today to talk about public service workers' student debt cancellation. That promises to be really important. Press conference this morning at the White House, both the president and the vice president issuing statements. Again, this is not about student debt relief writ large. It's specifically focused on people who work in public service for an extended period of time and debt cancellation for folks, again, that didn't go chase the big bucks in the private sector, but decided to not grasp the golden ring, but to go work in service to each and every one of you in the public sector. So really excited. We got a great show. But Tom, thank you again for joining me to guest host this first hour of the show.
Always my pleasure. You have a great lineup. You know, the student loan thing is very interesting to me because, you know, you having been in the public field, the pay is not comparable to the private sector. And then the idea that you are giving back to the public, there should be something in return. So it just seems like that should be a no-brainer, but it's still, there's a whole bunch of people who are opposed to it because people signed on and should have to pay.
Well, and there's lots of interesting dialogue around that, and there are certain requirements that have to be met.
Yes.
It's basically a decade's worth of near continuous public service. So it's not the folks that do the revolving door. It's a decade of continuous public service to even qualify. There's a whole bunch of other restrictions that are built into that potential student debt cancellation. So I'm thrilled to be able to talk about that and see what the president and vice president were announcing
yes.
today.
That'll be
but,
awesome.
But Tom, given that you're a small business owner and that you've worked in finance for a long time, and given that I'm an economist, I thought, gee whiz, it would be very interesting for you and I to dig into some of the very bizarre back and forth that occurred at the Chicago Economic Forum on Tuesday. This is Donald Trump getting interviewed by, I think he's the managing editor of like The Economist. This guy has been around for a long time. He's not a particularly political gentleman. He's a British guy. He's very restrained. And just the exchanges were, in short, extraordinary. Tom, what was your overall vibe check on that interview? I know you watched most of it, if not all of it. I mean, it was an oddity, to be sure, was it not?
But it was typical Trump. It was, I know best. I could probably do the Fed's job. I could probably, you know, run the economy better than anyone. If everyone just does what I say, it'll be good for everybody, which is astounding, right? And you already know this, Maggie. I'm preaching to the choir here. But the economy is made up of so many different pieces and so many moving parts. And having it all play together, but getting, you know, making sure there are, you know, no restrictions on it, making sure there's a free flow of information, there's a whole bunch of things that get in the way. And, you know, I'm of the understanding that both parties sometimes are at fault for what happens with the economy. Mm-hmm. But if you can just get out of the way and allow people to do what they need to do with what I would say very good guardrails, it just makes a heck of a lot more sense. But yes, that it was astounding to watch. And still, a majority of people think that Donald Trump will do better in the economy than Kamala Harris. And it's astounding to think that.
Yeah, respectfully to folks that have that opinion, it's not a well-informed one. And I say that in as a matter of fact. You can vote based on your feelings. You can vote based on sound bites from candidates, or you can look at what people who have spent their lives dedicated to the study of economics and, frankly, the vibrancy of the U.S. economy have said, from conservative economists to liberal ones. And they basically have a universal opinion about Donald Trump's economic plans. And that is, it will add somewhere in the ballpark of $7 to $15 trillion to the U.S. deficit. That is, it is likely to plunge us into a recession. It is likely to drive up tax costs somewhere in the ballpark of $2,500 to $4,000 a year for most middle class families. And 95% of us will see the lower earning 95% of us will see an increase in our taxes, while the top 5% of income earners will see their taxes go down. It is likely to slow or hamper manufacturing. Again, these are not my opinions. These are the opinions of economists across the ideological spectrum. That's what he was there to be asked questions about. You mentioned the Fed, Tom. So, Aaron, if you will, sir, let's take cut M, as in Mary. This is a little bit of a longer cut, but this is the question about preserving the independence of the Federal Reserve. Let's take a listen.
Let me ask you a very factual question. The Federal Reserve,
yeah.
You say you don't want interest rates to go higher. You've gone backwards and forwards about whether you want to keep Jerome Powell as chair of the Federal Reserve. His term as chair runs on to May 2026. Would you seek to remove or demote him?
Look, I think it's the greatest job in government. You show up to the office once a month and you say, let's see, flip a coin. And everybody talks about you like you're a god. Oh, what will he do? I mean, before, the guy used to walk into my office, he was like begging. Oh, he was fine.
But you talked about removing him once.
I did, because he was keeping the rates too high.
Yeah.
And I was right.
And you would do that again?
In fact, he actually dropped them too much when I did this, because I said I was threatening to terminate him. There was a question as to whether or not you could. And there was an article in the New York Times, two half pages. One page said I can do it by lawyers. One half page said I couldn't. And that was enough for him. And he dropped the hell out of the rates. He dropped them too much. He dropped them actually too much. Okay. Here's the story. I think that if you're a very good president with good sense, you should be able to at least talk to him. I don't say make the decision at all, but I've been a very successful businessman. I've done really good, much better. Now people are understanding how good I've done because they're seeing it. Real, much better than the fake news wants to give me credit for.
Just a on really the issue good, of no whether way, you would
report. I think I have the right to say, as a very good businessman and somebody that's used a lot of sense, I think I have the right to say that, you know, I think I'm better than he would be. I think I'm better than most people would be in that position.
Yeah, no, Donald Trump, you would not be better than any of the modern Federal Reserve chairs. I don't want Donald Trump setting interest rate policy for the United States. I just don't. The interest rate policy of the United States of America should not be driven by that guy's political whims.
And this is a combination of him, you know, sort of doubling down on attacking the experts. As if the experts don't know, or if I watch a YouTube video on interest rates, I can now run the Fed. It's just astounding. I mean, the amazing part is he thinks it's simple, but he doesn't even know all the components that go into the Fed's decision.
And he also doesn't recognize, listen, when the Fed is looking at when their target interest rate or is around 2.5%, that's what between 2 and 2.5%, 2.3, sometimes a little more. They balance that with what's going on with employment, right? Yes. And that is their goal, to balance sort of the desire for full employment as it is defined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, as well as what the inflationary or interest rate environment is for the country. And the Fed should always err on the more conservative or less risky tack. That is literally a central bank's job, whether it's the European Central Bank or the Federal Reserve here in the United States.
But the Fed also understands that deflation is a much bigger issue than inflation. And to guard against that, especially what's happening with China. But Maggie, you already know this. There's a yield curve. And mortgage rates are driven off the 10-year, not the Fed funds rate. And that market rate is set by the economy. It's based on people trading every single day. So when you follow and understand the yield curve, you understand that the market is already setting interest rates that most people borrow when it comes to big things.
Yeah, those sorts of statements, while they are certainly red meat applause lines for those predisposed to think that whatever Donald Trump says is gospel, does not make for sound economic policy. It just doesn't. The fact that he thinks so is frightening. And any CEO of a major company and any economist will tell you that you need the Fed to remain independent, period, full stop. Folks, that's Tom Paulsiewicz, my special guest host for this first hour of the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to come back with more sound from Trump's comments, as indecipherably gobbledygookish as they may be, from the Chicago Economic Forum on Tuesday. Keep it locked. More coming up here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'ma keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined by my guest host this hour, Tom Paulsiewicz. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got great guests coming up for you all show today, so you're going to want to keep it locked. But Tom, I wanted to get back to Trump's interview before the Chicago Economic Forum on Tuesday. I'm going to play a number of sounds that I curated for both you and our listeners this afternoon.
Awesome.
Because together, I will let them speak for themselves. Aaron, we're going to start with cut A. Let's take a quick listen.
And the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, which is a bipartisan outfit, put out some predictions the other day. If you add up all the promises you've made and your plans, would add $7.5 trillion to the debt.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than twice the total for Vice President Harris. You're on course to push up debt up to 150% of GDP. You know, this is a very business-like audience.
Yeah.
Why should they trust you with that?
Because we're about growth. She's got no growth whatsoever, and we're all about growth. We're going to bring companies back to our country. You look at even today, as I was driving over, I see these empty, old, beautiful, like steel mills and factories that are empty and falling down. Some have been converted to senior citizens' homes, but that's not going to do the trick. And we're going to bring the companies back. We're going to lower taxes still further for companies that are going to make their product in the USA.
Okay, keep that line in mind because we're going to come back to that. Aaron, cut C.
I told them, and I said it publicly, they're not going to sell one car into the United States. I said, if I run this country, if I'm going to be president of this country, I'm going to put a 100, 200, 2,000% tariff. They're not going to sell one car into the United States because we're not going to destroy our country. Because I know you're an anti-tariff guy, but I'm the exact opposite. There was no other way I could have stopped them other than, what am I going to do, negotiate with Mexico or China? You're not going to get anything from that. I said I'm going to put a 100, 200, or 300. I'm going to put the highest tariff in history, meaning I'm going to stop them from ever selling a car into the United States.
Wow. The great negotiator says, what am I going to do, negotiate with Mexico or China? Cut O, as in this guy is out of control. Cut O.
Maybe we can change the subject to technology, seeing you wouldn't answer about the Federal Reserve. The U.S. Justice Department is thinking about breaking up Alphabet, as Google likes to be known now. Should Google be broken up?
I just haven't gotten over something the Justice Department did yesterday, where Virginia cleaned up its voter rolls and got rid of thousands and thousands of bad votes, and the Justice Department sued them that they should be allowed to put those bad votes and illegal votes back in and let the people vote. So I haven't gotten over that. A lot of people have seen that. They can't even believe it.
The question is about Google, President Trump.
Right. Does someone need to turn the miracle ear up? And now cut you as an under.
When you put the tariffs on China, much smaller than you're planning to do at the moment, when you put them on, Apple came, you negotiated a difference for them.
I did.
That's much harder for small business people. Isn't the problem with the way that you do these kind of deals? You're bound to deal with the big companies. It's the small companies who get hit by all these different things and can't find exceptions.
Oh, we have exceptions. No, we had an exception rule. I gave Apple an exception. Tim Cook is a great business.
Apple is not a small company. And
no.
Please
no,
don't
but,
give it
but
to
he,
Cook.
But here's what
the
happened.
The question is about small business.
Yes, but I
what
would make...
What would you do for them?
No, but we have a very talented group of people. Bob Lighthizer did a very good job. We had great people. We had central casting. These are great... And a large group of people. We made exceptions. In the case of Apple, they need an exception. You know why? Because of Samsung.
And he goes on to talk about Apple. So I just want to summarize this. He was asked about his overarching economic policy and its impacts on the deficit and debt, specifically with reference to first tariffs, then small business people, also the labor market. With respect to immigration, he was asked about the Fed. He was asked a number of very clear, specific questions. He legit answered not a single one of them. And by the way, that first cut that ended with we're going to cut taxes for companies that are going to make their product in the USA. Donald Trump adopted a 0% foreign income tax rate for companies that situs their corporations in foreign countries. 0%. No, the guy incentivized businesses to leave this country. He did that. What do you make of all this together, Tom?
I think the biggest thing is, one of the things he did was he mixed up Google with Googling because he Googled the Virginia case. And he didn't talk about it. Yeah, I don't understand that. But what it really comes down to is most people are bad at math. And you would think somebody like Donald Trump, you know, just because you cut taxes and increase the size of the economy doesn't mean you're going to bring enough money into the Fed in order to cover the payments that we have to make. It's simple math. And he's never held to the, his feet are never held to the fire to actually do the math to say, here's how it's going to work. The magic is going to be that $7.5 trillion is somehow going to get covered with growth. And if you do the math, it would probably take, I haven't gone back and done it in a while, but it's probably going to take the economy doubling just to cover that amount if you lower taxes at the same time, which is frankly impossible.
It's impossible. And that's the underlying fallacy. The math doesn't math. It's all fiction. And what it would require is massive cutting of the federal budget, which yes. Eric Hovde and everyone else from yes. the MAGA right says is going to come out of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, veterans benefits, housing, infrastructure, and all the things that the middle class and small businesses need.
But Maggie, what they don't say is they're going to, you know, when they say they're going to get rid of Social Security, they don't say they're going to cut Social Security taxes.
Right.
And how do you collect Social Security taxes and then not pay out on Social Security? I don't understand.
Well, maybe the way to make Social Security work is to actually levy taxes on dollars earned above $140,000 a year, because those people are going to rely less on Social Security. Never mind.
Yeah.
We're actually trying to do math. Goodness my. Right. That's Tom Paulswitz, my special guest host. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Joe Fox with Tom. She's from Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We're going to talk about the youth vote. Keep it locked here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? Welcome back. Or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour, so I'm joined by a very special guest host. Two-time 5th District Congressional candidate Tom Paulswitz. And Tom and I are very privileged and excited to be joined by Joe Fox, Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, to talk about the youth vote and what we're doing to turn out folks on college campuses this November. Welcome, Joe. It's a real privilege to have you.
Thank you both for having me.
So tell us, how crucial do you and Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin think the younger vote is to this election outcome?
Oh, gosh, extremely important, especially in Wisconsin. I don't have the exact numbers on me, but I believe there's around 300,000 eligible voters within the college age demographics within the state of Wisconsin. That narrow number can potentially decide this election, not just our federal elections, but also our local and statewide elections. So the stakes could not be higher, and the youth vote is more important than ever this cycle.
Yeah, and that's a good point that there just are so many, and it doesn't take that many to tip this election the way we need it to. Joe, a different question for you, though, is how are you making sure that especially students know where to vote based on where they go to school or, you know, based on where they live? Because there's a lot of misinformation being fed to students, and I think just to try to keep them from voting. But how do you cut through that, and how do you help them understand where to vote?
Yeah, the key way that we handle that here at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin is we give power directly to the students. We run this program called Planned Parenthood Generation Action. These are registered student organizations on different college campuses across the state of Wisconsin. Currently, we have chapters at El Verno College, We're starting one up in Carthage, at UW Parkside, UW Milwaukee, and UW Madison, and we're looking to expand it throughout the state even further. And basically, we pay college organizers to go onto their campus, talk with their peers about election issues, especially reproductive rights for this election cycle. And then we give them the tools and the resources to facilitate these conversations in meaningful ways. We're not looking for these students to basically like read off like basic campaign slogans that we got from our Democratic nominees that we know are going to support reproductive access. We're looking for them to have like real, thoughtful, and intentional conversations about what does reproductive access look like? What does reproductive justice look like? And how can we kind of like turn these visions into a reality wherever their communities may be?
Mm-hmm. Joe, so important. Just this week, we heard that an unknown of unknown origins, a text was sent to potentially hundreds of students across UW campuses. Here's what the text said. And by the way, this is the public service announcement. What this text said is false. It is misleading. It is untrue. It is a lie. But here's what the text coming from a 262 number to hundreds of people in their early 20s on University of Wisconsin campus and elsewhere said, quote, warning, violating Wisconsin statutes, blah, 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 may result in fines of up to $10,000 or 3.5 years in prison. Don't vote in a state where you're not eligible, end quote. These statutes do not apply to students who moved from out of state to Wisconsin to attend school. You are still entitled to vote in Wisconsin legally. Nobody's going to prison for 3.5 years for this. Obviously, getting people the right information is key, Joe. What did your organization have any response, or did you get any questions from students related to these false and misleading and fraudulent text messages that were sent out this week?
Well, we haven't really received any questions from our students and our supporters on these college campuses. We do remain like very firm in the stance that we take on voting eligibility in these college groups. And it's a really great way for us to basically like block this misinformation from happening in the first place. Our students are holding tabling sessions, know your rights sessions, what's on your ballot sessions at their campus. And they're basically saying to students, especially out of state students, that if you are residing on your campus, whether that be within like university housing or in the surrounding neighborhoods because you're leasing an apartment, that makes you a valid resident of the state of Wisconsin. And that means that you are eligible to vote within whatever district that you're in. And we will continue to basically like inundate these students with that information so that they know very, very clearly what their rights are and they aren't going to be targets of this very, very deceitful information that's, or misinformation that's being presented to them.
Yeah, excellent.
In fact, this sort of text message and this kind of misinformation is itself a crime that is punishable by some pretty significant penalties. Folks, if you're wondering about some of the logistical operations of voting, whether it's voting early, voting absentee, drop boxes, mail-in, what sort of identification you can use, what sort of proof of residency you have to provide. I am literally going to go through this stuff point by point on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. So mark your calendars. I'm going to do it for about an hour. I want to spend a goodly amount of time going through this. You're going to want to get out, again, your sharpened pencils, take a few notes, post about it, share it. We're going to go through all those mechanics. Tom, did you have a question for Joe?
I do. And this one, you know, because right now, at least all the polling is showing there's a huge gender gap between young men and young women about how they're thinking about voting. So how are you and Planned Parenthood trying to cut through that and talk to young men about reproductive rights to help them understand what that impact is and what their role in that is?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll be real with you. A majority of the patients that we see at our clinics are women or people who don't identify as men. So it is honestly a challenge for us to be able to have these conversations, which is why we do targeted programming work. I have a lovely colleague, her name is Tara Brewster, and she holds a completely nonpartisan event every single year called Men's Wellness Day. And these are real conversations that we're holding with men in the community and talking to them about, like, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to promote, like, positive masculinity? And then we're also connecting them with local leaders in the community. We're inviting Derek Mosley to our upcoming session. He is a judge within the city of Milwaukee. He's a really amazing person, and he's very, very deeply passionate about the community of Milwaukee and this type of work. More broadly, though, especially for younger people, I'm a queer identifying person myself. And a lot of times what's not reflected is a lot of the gay men who come to our clinics and utilize our services, who are also very, very much in need of accurate information about, like, what issues are at stake for them for this upcoming election cycle. So my responsibility especially is to, like, find ways to connect with them in the community. For example, we just hosted a huge Get Out the Vote event at This Is It Bar, which is off Well Street in Milwaukee. It's the oldest gay bar.
Oldest gay bar in Wisconsin.
It's an amazing place. And one, we wanted to connect young folks with this amazing, vibrant community space that they can go to and give love to. And then we were registering folks to vote because the online voter registration deadline was yesterday, October 16th. We had over 200 attendees at that event. We were able to interview them, ask them questions about why is voting important to them? Why do they think repro rights are important? All of that good stuff. And we were getting responses from women, yes, but from men especially, who were saying, women deserve to have the right to choose. Women deserve to have their full bodily autonomy. And they understand that a woman's right is inextricably connected with their own rights, especially gay men. Their rights are inextricably connected to women's rights to choose what is best for them and their bodies.
That's great. Well, thanks for that work.
No kidding. And that's really the meta point. When I've talked to men that are already engaged with reproductive freedom and these issues, what I hear most frequently, be they cisgendered, hetero, queer identifying, they are identifying with the fact that every single person's civil rights and our baseline freedoms can only be measured in this country by the measuring stick of how do we protect, preserve, and defend the civil rights of every single one of us. And that's the derogation of a woman's right to bodily autonomy and reproductive freedom challenges the baseline civil rights of every American citizen, no matter how you identify. So that to me, and frankly, do you love any women? Do you know any women out there that you love and care about? Because if so, this is about you too in that very way as well. Joe, a question for you. When you look at this next election cycle, how important do you think reproductive freedom rates for younger voters, both men and women?
Well, pretty strongly. It's within, I believe, through the Associated Press, I believe they said that it's around one of the top issues. 2 in 5 respondents reported that that's one of the main 3 issues that's on the line for them for this election cycle. So abortion, I mean, it's always been a hot topic within our politics, but now, more than ever, it is the most important that it could ever be. We have the potential to flip our state assembly and shortly our state senate so that we can finally get legislation on, like, passed into laws within the state of Wisconsin that can enshrine these protections. It shouldn't just be Planned Parenthood goes and files a petition to the state Supreme Court of Wisconsin and says this should be a constitutionally protected right. It should be laws that are in place that are making an abortion abundance, dare I say. the ability for people to go to the clinic and know that they can get an abortion appointment lined up for them within the hour, because sometimes like they're not going to be able to have 24 hours available to them, as abortion clinics are so few and far in between in the state of Wisconsin. It also looks like we need to make sure that we have responsible programs in place that can make sure that people are able to take care of children, that the option to become a parent is widely accessible to them. So when we talk about abortion access, that's just one step of the way. People are also thinking about, how is it going to be easy for me to be a parent in my community? So when I talk about the abortion conversation, I'm also bringing in other aspects of reproductive justice, such as, how are we making sure our communities are taken care of? Because those issues are all interconnected with each other, and they should always be talked about in tandem.
Joe, I'm giving you a virtual hug across the interwebs right now, because what you said in your last response is the actual heart, both literally and figuratively, of the matter. And that is, reproductive freedom also requires a society that is organized to support the choice to have the child, that understands that we must make investments in prenatal care, in postnatal care, that we don't need to be dumping women off of Badger Care right after they've given birth. That is an abomination. That we need affordable childcare. And all of that is part of what reproductive freedom means. Can we imagine a world where a woman doesn't need to worry about having healthcare after she gives birth, that doesn't have to fear whether her baby will be hungry or will get pediatric care? That starts to be a world where maybe women are not so afraid to have the child, where we have created communities that lift us all up and ensure these basic building blocks of human dignity for all. So again, a huge virtual hug to you, Joe Fox, from me. Tom, last question. We got under a minute left.
I'll just make one quick statement, and Joe, you can chime in on this, but I know a lot of young people who are putting off having a family because of just the environment that we're in today. And they're just looking around going, people do not value my body, my reproductive rights. So why would I bring another human being into this environment where I don't know what's going to happen to them?
Thanks so much.
You said it perfectly.
Thanks so much. That is Joe Fox of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin. We're going to come back with my co-host this hour, Tom Paulswitz, to finish it out. Keep it locked here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, y'all. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, joined this 2 o'clock hour by my very special co-host, Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable candidates ever to run for the 5th District in Wisconsin. Maybe the most reasonable person to ever run for the 5th District.
Which is why I think I lost twice.
But probably. And I mean that post-2010 redistricting. Yes. I digress. We've got a couple of great texters and callers lined up. If you want to join us for this last segment, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Shout out to Mark from Cornell, Wisconsin, sharing us pictures of the UW lacrosse rally getting ready for Vice President Harris. His son is there. His son early voted. I love all of this. Go, Mark, and your son up in Cornell, Wisconsin, and at the Harris rally in at UW lacrosse. Amazing. Andrew from Maine texting in, how does the Trumpster fire intend to address retaliatory tariffs? He has no idea. The guy at the Economic Forum couldn't even get there in the questioning because Trump just over narrated the heck out of it with Rand the Weave. He now talks himself about the Weave, which
he's proud of it.
Yeah, he's like, that's what they call it. It's very special. Yeah. I don't think it's special at all. It's deeply
I'm really good
concerning.
At it.
Really good at the weave. Vic from the 608, he asks, if you haven't already discussed this, can you explain why the kind of misinformation that was texted to those 20-somethings here in the state of Wisconsin is not prosecuted by our state attorney general? They have reported this to the attorney general's office, Josh Calls, as well as Merrick Garland's office. I have no doubt this will be investigated, but unless the person that did this is galactically stupid, I'm pretty certain they probably used a burner phone and it is not traceable. But this happened in 2016. A guy by the name of Doug Mackey, who went by the name of Ricky Vaughn, he was a far right guy. He actually ended up in jail over sending this same sort of misinformation to black voters at the time. So, yep, these prosecutions happen. They take a while.
And this is just the beginning. I mean, this is going to be happening over and over. And it's going to, I think the hardest part is for people to weed through that. But just, you know, there are lots of great things, lots of good areas to go investigate. And Maggie, I'm so happy that you're doing that show next Tuesday to sort of go through all that, because that's really important for people to know.
Yeah, if you missed it before, folks, set your timers for 2 p.m. this coming Tuesday. I am going to literally go through all of the nuts and bolts of voting, all the questions, the pros and cons of voting. If you mail it in, the drop box, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to want to not miss this. Let's take a couple of callers here, Tom. Greg from Waukesha, what would you like to say today?
Hi, Tom and Maggie. And Tom, we have a good friend in common, Denise Shaman. So definitely, you know, thank you, Tom, for representing the needs of people with disabilities and all people's needs. Maggie, I have to be honest with you, and I may come to tears on this point, but you've made me think differently about the pro-life issue. You know, and civic media has. All my years of living, I've been pro-life because of the propaganda. I've been sold the conservative propaganda. But it's about, pro-life is also about quality of life, right? And what kind of quality of life, you know, because the rights views abortion is murder. Well, Maggie, why would I want to bring up a child if I had a child in a society that doesn't really value life? And that's something civic media has really, really taught me. And listening to civic media has just opened my eyes up to all sorts of things. Like, I feel like, Maggie, pardon the pun, but I'm not being blinded anymore. Like, I'm just, my eyes are being opened to this stuff. And so I want to just thank you guys for opening the eyes. And I'm pro-life, but I'm pro all of life. If we can't be pro all of life, then why be pro, you know, life at all? And if we can't stand for those who can't stand for themselves, then that's not truly what we need in society. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank Greg, you. Thank you. And thank you for sharing. And that, I think that loving life and supporting life, including the lives of people that are here in their full, in the best expression of human dignity, that's the piece that's missing right now when I listen to so many people on the right speak. And it's the fundamental inconsistency. One of the things that I have said on the show specifically about abortion is this is a complicated choice and a difficult choice for nearly every woman that I know that's had an abortion, or any woman that has talked openly and publicly about choosing to terminate a pregnancy. And that is why those decisions need to remain with women and their doctors and their faith leaders. Tom, we're coming up on time. I'll give you the opportunity for some closing thoughts here.
The issue itself, you know, when I think about pro-life, it's, are you for making sure people have the quality of care, the access to jobs, the access to housing that they need in order to live at least the starting point of a decent life. And we just don't do that in this country. And it's one of the things that I've continued to fight for.
And that begins with health care for all, child care that's affordable, a living wage. We're going to talk about all of that continuously on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Maggie and the Millionaires is up next. Don't miss it.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.